world, welcome back to the Wungle US Soccer Podcast. As always, I'm joined by my friend and co-host, George Abinaw. So George, let's start here. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great today. Days are getting easier over here and everything's good.
Awesome, man. I'm doing well myself. You know, last week I talked about my Sergiño Dest jersey coming in the mail, and now apparently is in a transfer war between Barcelona and Bayern Munich. So I'm kind of regretting that purchase, but other than that, I'm doing very well. You know, Brandon Aaronson's off to Salzburg. So I guess let's just start there and talk about those two big news developments. First of all, we have Sergiño Dest between Bayern and Barcelona. What do you think about those possible moves? Both obviously are exciting for the surface level reasons, but in terms of the tactical fit, like where do you see it being better for him?
It's actually interesting. I saw a tweet. I can't remember who it was to give credit to it, but pretty much it was along the lines of, right now we're in a spot where we have people who are getting upset that one of our players might be going to Barcelona. So I just found that pretty interesting because I remember last year it was all, you know, Sergiño Dest, he's going to play this season, maybe next at Ajax, he's going to go to Barcelona. Then obviously Bayern Munich came to the picture, and because Bayern is flourishing and Barcelona is kind of digressing right now, people really want him to go to Bayern. But personally, I think I would like to see him at Barcelona. Whereas you see Bayern, they're pretty settled at right back. You have Pavard who plays there, won a World Cup playing that position. You have Kimmich. If Pavard goes down, he's going to move from midfield to right back most likely. So yes, Sergiño Dest might do Alphonso Davies where he comes in almost seemingly out of nowhere and makes a spot his own. But Barcelona is in absolute shambles right now, which I think is pretty interesting because they're a top club who we know is still going to be good. People obviously are saying, you know, Barcelona's not doing well, the club's not being run well, but they still finished second place in La Liga. Clearly, they are one of the best teams in the world. And if he goes to Barcelona, Nelson Semedo's off the Wolves now. So he has a great chance to be their starter after a couple weeks. And Barcelona, the type of team they are, maybe they'll be bad this year. They're not going to be bad for the next 5 years. They're not going to be a bad team for the next 10 years. They will get good again. And if Sergiño Dest is a part of Barcelona's first team for the next 10 years, that would be absolutely incredible.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Just to add some names to that Barcelona first team in 10 years, maybe Conrad De La Fuente is also there. You know, he's been a star for them in the preseason. Just harkening back to your earlier points about whether it's Bayern or Barcelona, for me, I'm actually on the same page, you know. Bayern would be really nice. I think they do a very good job of developing their players and they have a system in place. But I look at Sergiño Dest and he's a rare player for our talent pool where he's extremely swaggy. Think about how that fits in at Bayern or Barcelona. And I think he would improve as an overall player more so maybe at Bayern. Of course, he would get jacked. You know, that was the Bayern thing these days. But I think, you know, his ability to play with Ronald Koeman, who is actually the Netherlands coach who tried to recruit Sergiño Dest to the Netherlands. He's ours, by the way. And so I think that's a cool thing. You know, he could potentially link up with him. And Koeman's always talked about him as being this player that'd be perfect for Barcelona. And I think about his technical ability and how, you know, that right back spot since Dani Alves really hasn't been solidified by anybody. You mentioned Semedo's off to Wolves. And I'm not exactly sure what that position looks like now. And I think it's right for someone to come in, a young guy like Sergiño Dest, to make it his own. And I think about, at the end of the day, they still have Messi. They still have Philippe Coutinho, who, of course, hasn't performed well for them, but he's a quality player nonetheless. Antoine Griezmann, Dembele, Ansu Fati. Like, bad for Barcelona relative to the rest of the world is still pretty good. So I think the situation looks bad because of the prestige attached to Barcelona, but I still think that, like, the prestige of Barcelona makes it so that no matter what, they're going to do whatever they can to make sure that they stay relevant in the Champions League and they stay relevant domestically. And they do whatever they can for Messi in these last couple of years. And I think with Sergiño being a younger guy, you know, it's not just, okay, you can help us win now, but he's someone for the future as well. So like you said, he could be someone who could play for Barcelona for 10 years in the future. So that's very exciting for me. And I know for Sergiño, Barcelona is definitely one of his dream clubs. Obviously, Bayern's top in their own right. But man, I'm just excited for whatever happened between the two of them. Like, just to have an American playing for either of them, isn't that still pretty cool?
Exactly. I think the thing with Barcelona, Barcelona is still Barcelona. And I think that's why their struggles have been kind of blown out of proportion. Yes, I remember watching the Bayern-Barca game just like everyone else, the 8-2 loss. And to be honest, it probably was the most embarrassing club loss I've ever watched in my life. I really couldn't imagine what I was seeing with my eyes. But at the end of the day, I don't know how many times I'll repeat it, Barcelona is Barcelona. As a U.S. fan base, we were getting happy when Clint Dempsey was playing for Fulham. And now we're at a point where two of the best teams in the world, two of the biggest markets in the world want a player that plays for the U.S. national team. So I'm just happy with Sergiño Dest wherever he goes, but I wouldn't be necessarily mad at that Barca move at all.
Yeah, man, I feel like worst case scenario, it's pretty good. And honestly, worst case scenario, he's with another American. We have Chris Richards, who actually got some playing time with Bayern over the weekend, and Conor De La Fuente, who I mentioned earlier. Koeman actually said, you know, he really impressed me this preseason. And, you know, with La Liga, they have 12 players on the bench. And with Barcelona, you know, kind of figuring out their squad, and they haven't exactly rounded it out yet, he could definitely be someone who makes the bench this season. And, you know, is it crazy to say that he makes his first team debut within, you know, the next three games? And obviously he'll get sent down to Barca B at some point. I think they start their season a little bit later in October. So, like, what's the outlook for Conor De La Fuente?
I think it's interesting. It's one of those things where we don't necessarily want to get ahead of ourselves. But we saw him at the end of last season with the first team. We saw him preseason with the first team. We're seeing him in training with the first team. He's in the photo shoots with the first team. Some players went down to the B team. He was not one of them. So it's one of those things where it's watch this space. And another key thing is that there was a change of manager. When he was getting those chances at the end of the season, it was a different manager. Now it's Ronald Koeman, who after the preseason match in which he scored a goal that they unfortunately ruled for offside, said he was the most intriguing young player they had on the field.
That wasn't offsides, by the way. Did you see it?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think it was offsides. They just knew U.S. Soccer Twitter was blown up that day, and they didn't want to do it. Same reason why Weston McKennie's goal didn't count, because they didn't want U.S. Soccer Twitter to blow up, and I respect that. But
yeah, they know how we are, dude. We're crazy.
Yeah, so just it's one of those things where it's like Conor De La Fuente right now is at a good spot for where a 19-year-old should be at Barcelona. Not everyone's going to be Messi starting off at 17. Ansu Fati's absolutely killing it at 17. But a 19-year-old who has a squad number, it looks like he'll get the number 29, under 30 at Barcelona as a teenager, that's not something to mock at.
Yeah, and don't forget, guys, he's American. So, you know, it's also just cool just talking about his development. Like, I remember watching him at the U20 World Cup, and he was kind of this one-dimensional, one-footed, like, very athletic, very pacey winger who didn't really have technical skills refined yet. You can really see the step up in his game to where he's more comfortable, you know, taking on guys and using both feet. And so I'm just encouraged. You know, I don't know what the future looks like for him, but it's going to be a good one no matter what, I feel like, you know?
Exactly, man. I'm excited. We're just getting these young players to all these different places. The future is now. I honestly could not be happier.
Yeah, man, definitely. So let's just transition quickly here, talking about the future being now. We have this rumor that's pretty much finalized at this point that Brandon Aaronson will be going off to Red Bull Salzburg to join Jesse Marsch. And so let's just talk about that, man. I'm very encouraged for this signing. You know, I think it will go through first and foremost. And I think that the opportunity of linking up with an American coach is very cool. And, you know, they have a prominent attack and they've shown they can develop players. So I'm very excited. But what are your thoughts?
For me, obviously, it would have been nice to see him go straight to the Bundesliga. But the reason why I don't really mind this move is for a couple of reasons. One, it's an American coach. We know and trust Jesse Marsch. People absolutely love Jesse Marsch as a coach. So from that side, we know he's going to be in good hands and he's going to have not just a coach, but a teacher who's going to guide him on how to be a professional in Europe and guide him in all sorts of tactical aspects of his game. Additionally, Red Bull Salzburg plays in a league where they are clearly the best team. And I remember I watched the documentary they had last season back when they had Haaland, Minamino, guys like that. And the way they play, the way they carry themselves, the way they attack each game is going to make Brandon Aaronson better. They're the type of team that has the ability to score 4 to 6 goals every single game. And one of the critiques on Brandon Aaronson was that he's not clinical enough, that maybe he could be a little bit more explosive and clinical in the final third, getting his shots off, getting that last pass off. So if his team is getting multiple goal scoring chances every game, Brandon Aaronson is going to become incredible at that. In fact, I think that's probably the aspect of his game where he's going to most improve at Salzburg. Another area of the game which will probably improve is his defensive work rate, because Jesse Marsch is a guy that likes to attack to defend, win the ball back right away. And in the MLS game, maybe he can get a little bit comfortable and not do that work, though I have seen him do it. But no matter what league you are in Europe, he's going to have to do that. So he'll get better in that sense too. And for me, the last reason why I love it, he's going to play in the Champions League. Salzburg last year qualified for the group stage for the first time, I think, in 10 years it was. They're right in the hunt again this year, and they have players to keep doing it year after year. So I'm excited for Brendan Aaronson to go to Salzburg. Obviously, I hope it's not for too long. They have a great track record of moving people along. So maybe after 1 or 2 years, we'll see him in the big time.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with all of those points. I definitely think that, one, it'll be a good opportunity for him to, of course, be with an American coach. And two, it also forces him to improve. Because like you said, the domestic league is not incredibly strong. But at the same time, the responsibilities of playing well for the top team are still going to be there. And of course, you know, their team is stacked for some league like this. And they played Maccabi Tel Aviv a couple days ago. They beat them 2-1 on aggregate. So they have one more game. And as long as they win that one, they should be into the Champions League. And like you said, they have Daka, who's a legitimate player. And so the options will be there for him in order to be like this centralized playmaker, even out on the wing. So I'm encouraged. And I also think that it'll force him, like you said, to grow offensively, but not only offensively, but on the defensive side. And I think that's what we talk about the national team. That's what we want to see, because it's not just, you know, what are we doing to help us score, but what are we doing to help facilitate possession, help to win balls back? And, you know, his positioning is good, but there isn't the same path goal demands in the MLS that there would be playing in a Champions League match or playing domestically for Red Bull Salzburg. So I think that will definitely be the next step for him. And, you know, I'm very excited for him. I want to give a quick shout out to the Wasserman agency. You know, that's two guys for them. They got Brandon Aronson and then Weston McKennie to Juventus. So that's two big jobs by them. And
I'd like to just talk about Philadelphia Union for a second, their youth academy. And I think one encouragement for Philadelphia Union is that obviously they want Brandon Aronson in their playoff push, but that group of Philadelphia Union homegrowns in the 2099 range is absolutely killing it right now in MLS. We saw Matt Real get his first goal. We saw him get two assists in their last game. We saw Mark McKenzie get two assists in their past two games. And then Anthony Fontana, another guy who was playing at first before Brendan Aaronson came. Then Aaronson kind of came in, you know, you could say maybe stole his thunder. But now he has three goals in his last two games. So if Brendan Aaronson goes, he's going to be put into the starting lineup full time. So I think just credit to Philadelphia Union for what they are doing. They're going to get some money off of Aaronson. They're going to get some money off of Mark McKenzie. And you have these two guys now who are pushing for minutes. They signed Paxton Aaronson for next season. They signed Jack McGlynn for next season, Nathaniel Harriel. So there is a clear pathway from academy to first team to stardom from the Philadelphia Union Academy. And I know when they started giving away their draft picks 2 years ago, people were saying, oh, are they doing things right? Do they know what they're doing? And clearly they do. So I just want to give a shout out to Philadelphia Union for that.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. I know last week we talked about how MLS can kind of get in the way of these transfers and teams can kind of hold them up to grab extra money here and there. But from all of our indications, the Philadelphia Union seem to be doing a great job. And so I think that's just a model for MLS teams and just MLS in general to say it can be done and look how they're doing it. So it is very encouraging. And shout out to Jim Curtin and all the Philadelphia Union guys who are doing great things. And I'm not just excited for Aaronson, but McKenzie as well. Like, he's someone I'm very intrigued about long term. And he has looked incredibly the part so far in MLS. But, you know, he's someone that could be the national team picture, Aaronson as well. But I saw this thing come out today on NBC Sports, and it was talking about the top 25 players for the Americans, you know, who are our best guys. So instead of taking the entire podcast here and breaking down the 25 best Americans, I think what we can agree upon here is the core guys. And then where the discussion comes in is we can talk about who are the next guys after that. So with this in mind, you know, for CONCACAF, there's 23-man roster, and we're not going to break down the entire roster again. But I'll read off our core guys, and then we can kind of go into discussion from there on who's outside that list and kind of work their way in or who's kind of falling behind, all right? Sounds good? Let's do this. So here's our list, okay? So we have Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, John Brooks, Sergiño Dest, of course, Gio Reyna, Zach Steffen, Jordan Morris, Josh Sargent, Anthony Robinson, Reggie Cannon, Aaron Long, Tim Weah, if he's healthy, Josie Altidor, and yes, Giassi Zardes. So, George, let's start here. Who are the guys that could squeeze in? Who are the guys in that list that could maybe fall out?
So I think one area some people I saw having some debates over the weekend is at the goalkeeper position. There's people who are still not convinced that we can have a starting goalkeeper who's not a starter at their club. We'll see if Zach Steffen does make his debut tomorrow. It looks very likely he will make his debut for Man City in the Carabao Cup. But one guy who's on everyone's tongues, even our tongues as well in the past, is Matt Turner. He is the best American goalie in MLS this season. He has shown time and time again that he not only can make quality saves, but he's shown that he can be locked in for a full 90 minutes and can be counted on for his team when necessary. So he's a guy who I'd say is right there. Obviously, in the past, you've had Sean Johnson, Brad Guzan. There's Ethan Horvath, whose club situation is very murky at the moment.
So. He's also a backup. Like, you know, if you're saying Stefan can't be the starter because he's on a backup, like Horvath is the same kind of argument.
Exactly. So I think looking at the goalie position, the next up guy, I would say, if you think Zach Steffen can't be our starter since he's not a starter at the club level, it is Matt Turner.
Yep, I agree. I really like Matt Turner. And I think, you know, we've seen so much Brad Guzan. Honestly, I'm kind of just tired of looking at him. I know that sounds kind of weird, but like we need some fresh faces. And I think, you know, he has a Lithuanian passport now. That is Matt Turner. So who knows where he ends up? But I think, you know, the national team is the next logical progression for him because we don't really have a next young crop guy. You know, a lot of our goalies are either very young or very old. And so I think he's kind of in between and definitely an up-and-coming guy. Let's also talk about Aaron Long. I want to have this discussion. I know people are saying he's not playing well. Obviously, people are saying there are younger options now, like a Chris Richards, like a Mark McKenzie. What do we do with Aaron Long?
I think Aaron Long, he's having not a great season right now. We'll be completely honest with that. But I think he's one of those guys who is still probably within the four center backs you call up tomorrow if there's a key game. You have guys breathing down his neck. You look like at Mark McKenzie, who's probably been the best American center back in MLS this season. You have Walker Zimmerman, who's also been fairly solid for a Nashville team that's been probably better than a lot of people expect them to be. And we've seen Walker Zimmerman turn into a leader as well. So Aaron Long is no longer as penciled in as a starter next to John Brooks as most people would have had a couple months ago. But I think he's benefiting from some of our future guys not getting as many minutes as we would like and not playing, I guess, as well as we would like. Obviously, Atlanta United hasn't been great this season, so Miles Robinson, maybe his name isn't as hot on as many people's tongues. Chris Richards is still building his portfolio. So right now, Aaron Long probably is in any camp, but it's more of a watch this space because there's a lot of guys breathing down his neck.
I completely agree. I think you mentioned Miles Robinson. I'd also add Cameron Carter-Vickers to that group, but maybe he's penciled in the four-guy group, not necessarily a starter. But, you know, he's like a destroyer guy, so I kind of like him. He's very aggressive, and I don't know exactly what the long-term outlook is for him. He's young enough to where he could become a core member, but, you know, I like him as well. Arna, who else is on your list?
I mean, if we're talking about center backs, it's a case of where in the world is Matt Miazga? Because Chelsea is known for loaning players out left and right. He's been on loan for multiple years now. Clearly, he's not been with the first team. So it's a question of, where is Matt Miazga going to go? Where is he going to play? Because he's a player who I rate very much. He kind of did the MLS to Europe top European club route before it was a thing when he went to Chelsea. Even played in, I think it was two Premier League games, his first spell at Chelsea before. He's been on loan all this time now. So I think he is a guy who, if he gets to a place where he can play, he will be a guy who's within the top four center backs in the national team pool. But like so many people, we just need to make sure he's getting on the field.
Yep. You know, I feel bad for Matt Miazga. I really do. Because all we've seen so far this offseason is a possible move to Turkey. And, you know, he was pretty good last year with Reading. And I think he's 25. So he's at the point in his life now where he wants to make, you know, a full-time move and find a legitimate home. I'm sure he's tired of renting. I'm sure he's all of those things that come with it. So I hope for his own sake that he figures something else out. And I hope that it works out for him soon. But in terms of guys who are maybe younger or have the talent to be there, Brandon Aaronson is the first guy on my list. You know, I think, honestly, for me, right now, if I have a game tomorrow, I put him in the conversation for the core because in terms of our number 10 options, maybe Sebastian Legette is a safer option. You can bet on his performance. But I think in terms of, like, what he offers compared to the other older guys in the pool, I love everything about Brandon Aaronson. Yes, he has his flaws, but he's trending up in the right direction, and there's really no player hotter than him in the MLS right now. So I don't know. I'm all aboard the Brandon Aaronson train. Convince me that he's not a core member.
I agree. Brandon Aaronson, right now, if we have a 23-man roster, he is going to get called up. I would think so. But once again, it's just one of those things where you don't want to push someone too hard, too fast. And the fact of the matter is he got his first national team call-up in appearance off of a decent season last year. For me, he's been miles better this year. He's shown more things that to warrant a move this year than he did last year. And he still got a call up after last year. So definitely, I do think Brandon Aaronson is a guy who would get called up. I don't know if he's necessarily a core member at this time, but for me, if you ask me in 3 months, in 4 months, if he's a core member, I hope I'm saying yes 100%.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. I guess maybe not necessarily core members, but I think about, you know, the next wave of young guys, and people forget to include him in that list, but I think it's just important that we do.
And I think that brings up a different point of when we talk about core members, when we talk about who's getting called up, it's that youth versus experience conundrum that we always want to talk about, because there's so many young guys who we want to say, call him up. Like, we need to see this guy in a U.S. national team jersey right now. But then you have a guy like Sebastian Legette. You have maybe Daniel Lovitz, who really hasn't been that bad for Nashville either. You have these guys time and time again. We included Yasi Zardes in our core group. There's some people who never want to see Zardes in a U.S. jersey again, even though I think he's up to 9 or 10 goals in MLS this season. So I think we just need to find that perfect balance of who is ready, who is not ready. I think you could probably make an argument for a lot of guys from last summer's U20 World Cup team to get called up. Obviously, Pamukkal's out with his injury right now. But you look at Uli Lanez. You look at Conrad De La Fuente, who's playing well. You look at Richie Ledesma. Chris Durkin, who's once again is starting European leagues. Mark McKenzie, Chris Gloucester, Chris Richards. Just looking at that one squad alone, there's so many guys who at some point or another, someone has said, call them up. So now we need to find this balance of, hold on, are we bringing in one of these guys and hoping that he doesn't shit the bed? Or are we calling in Will Trapp? Are we saying Darlington Nagbe, come back and play for us? Are we saying Sebastian Legette, you're starting at the 10? So it's just one of those things you have to think about, whether or not we truly are ready to completely let these guys dictate the U.S. national team right now.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think that's also kind of the issue we talk about, the lost generation. Like, there are only a few guys who are over 25 who are really part of the core. You know, we talk about a John Brooks. He wasn't really even part of our developmental system, you know. Jordan Morris is one of the few. Aaron Long is a late bloomer. Josie Altidore is still around. Jossie Zardes is a late bloomer in his own right. So we don't really have those, like, veterans who not necessarily offer some upside, but provide some stability, and you know they're not just flat. You know, like, I think of Daniel Lovitz, no disrespect to him, but, like, he offers nothing for the future, you know? And I think he's stable at best, but it's like, what is the point of that call-up? Like, what does it do? And I can make the argument that, you know, calling up a Richie Ledesma, who I would probably call up, like, he's very, very close, but you want to see that first team, okay, check that box, you know, let's make sure he's ready to handle that. Because if he can handle PSV, he can probably handle being in the camp. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to play, doesn't necessarily mean he's going to start, but, you know, it's kind of a logical progression. And I guess one of the benefits of World Cup qualifying being pushed back once again and the October camp being canceled is there's more time, you know? So I think about more time and who that benefits, it's those kind of young guys. But one guy I think right now you have to put him on the squad, and he was going to be there in March, is Johnny Cardoso. He has to be there for me. You know, he's playing very well in Serie A in Brazil. We talked about him on the last podcast, and I don't know, I've watched him a lot, and he's just so calm. For someone that age, you know, you talk about, like, the younger guys, there's a lot of a learning curve, and I think the way he just sits back between the defenders in some of his games or comes up when he can and tries to play those long balls, like, I love all of that from him, and not many fans really watch him or know much about him, but damn, dude, he is special, and I want him on the team.
Yeah, I really hope we get a situation with Johnny Cardoso where he realizes we were on to him before he really broke out, because he was in that U23 camp last year, so we had our eye on him, and then now he breaks out, starting multiple games now for the best team in Brazil. So it is incredible to see. I think he is a guy who could factor into a Greg Berhalter midfield. Berhalter has been working on him. He's been calling him, keeping him up to date with what is going on the U.S. national team. And clearly Greg Berhalter told him he is on the fast track to the first team. Maybe he plays the U-20s, maybe he plays the U-23s. It's clearly been relayed to Johnny Cardoso that he is a first team national team player. And I'm hoping that's going to push him to securing our spot with the national team. And hopefully he doesn't get an inkling to accept any Brazil call if he gets.
Yeah, I really hope he doesn't. They're just so stacked, and I just don't know. Like, maybe you could get one or two call-ups in his career. But, you know, if he wants to have a significant national team career, it's got to be with us. But, you know, we talk about kind of that lost generation, going back to my earlier point. What do we do with DeAndre Yedlin?
Personally, I still like what DeAndre Yedlin has to give. And a different aspect of his game he showed today, Newcastle won 7-0 in the Carabao Cup. He's playing at left back. And yes, it was against a very low-level opponent, and he did get an assist, even though it was a simple pass which someone scored a banger off of. But I still think DeAndre Yedlin has – I think DeAndre Yedlin has something to give for the national team still. And at this point, I think he is right there in the right-back race. I think if you want to go with a natural left-footer at left-back, I think you do start Anthony Robinson left-back, Sergiño Dest at right-back. But – I do think DeAndre Yedlin is probably overall as a player still better than Reggie Cannon and Anthony Robinson. And I know some people might not agree with that, but we have to look past what you know gets us excited and what works. DeAndre Yedlin has played in the Premier League for multiple years. Yes, he hasn't been necessarily getting as many minutes recently as he has in the past, but Anthony Robinson still hasn't played in the Premier League for Fulham. He's getting his appearances in the Cup. Reggie Cannon's playing in Portugal after playing MLS. DeAndre Yedlin, if he was playing in the championship, would probably be putting up the numbers Anthony Robinson was putting. If DeAndre Yedlin was playing the MLS, he would be looking as good, if not better, than Reggie Cannon. If DeAndre Yedlin was playing in Portugal, he would be looking great right now. So I don't think we should just go away from DeAndre Yedlin just yet. Even if you want to start Dest and Robinson, maybe throw in DeAndre Yedlin as a late sub at right midfield if you need some speed. But for me, I definitely think he is still a key member of this team.
I just feel like it's tough. You know, you carry two right backs and two left backs. Like, is that something you really want to do? I don't know. That's Greg Berhalter's decision. But I agree. I mean, if you're just looking at the most talented players in the pool, he's definitely on that list of the top 25 guys for me. Because like you said, you know, he's done it. He's still doing it. And is it at a super high level? No. But you have to respect where he is now and the numbers he's put up in the past. And you know, like you said, today he was solid. Obviously, he was not a great opponent. But, you know, worst case scenario, he's very good. You know what you're getting. He's not an incredible defender. But there's something to be said about having the pace on the right side. Like, that's just a valuable skill to have. And I think you talk about, like, veteran leadership. And obviously, we don't have a bunch of that. And maybe that's an overrated quality. But he's someone who's been with the U.S. before. He was on the field in Trinidad, and he was in the 2014 World Cup. So, you know, he's one of the few guys we have from that generation that was able to make a very strong career for himself. And I think that's valuable because you talk about building this culture that Zach Steffen said we don't have much of. Like, DeAndre Yedlin is a holdover, and Josie Altidore is, but he's closing out on his national team window, honestly. I think so. We can talk about that in a second. But what do? He's a valuable player, so we have to keep him on the team. I think for now, until he really gives us a reason or someone steps up to be like, okay, he's clearly better than him, like, you have to just call him in. You know, out of respect at this point, is my opinion. But let's talk Josie Altidore. Where are we on that?
Josie Altidore, once again, he's another guy who some people want to, you know, call this guy up or call this guy up. But Josie Altidore, once again, is somebody who is necessary to the national team picture. His hold-up play is pretty unrivaled when it comes to the U.S. national team right now. Josh Sargent has shown bits and pieces of it. Yassi Zarrez is less of a hold-up striker and more getting behind, getting a six-yard box finish. So Josie Altidore is still the best hold-up striker we have in the national team pool. If you don't want to start him, maybe you don't start him, but I still think he is somebody that you carry. And I look at a guy, I think of like Daryl Dike, and I think maybe that's the heir to Josie Altidore. Another guy who thrives holding the ball. We've seen a lot in the modern game. It's been built around pace. And Josie Altidore is almost like of a dying breed of pure hold-up strikers who love pinning the defender, who love letting the wingers around him make runs so he can slip them in. And I've seen that from Daryl Dike as well when I've watched Orlando City. But right now, Josie Altidore is still the best player we have. And if you carry two or three strikers, you can't be taking the exact same kind of players. You need to have new looks. So if you're bringing three strikers as Greg Berhalter, you need at least one of them who thrives holding the ball up. And right now, our best hold-up striker is still Josie Altidore.
No, I completely agree. You know, I wasn't saying he's not in the national picture. I'm not even saying come 2022, he's out of the picture. Like, I think, like you said, his skill set compared to the other guys we have, it's very unique. And, you know, my favorite Josie quality these days is just seeing him on Twitter whenever there's something bad said about a USMNT player or something good, you know, he's always there hyping them up. So I love having that. And I think leadership is just a very undervalued skill at the national team level, because you want to foster some level of community, some level of continuity, and some level of like true culture. And, you know, Josie really loves playing for the US and he loves everything that comes with it. And he embodies everything I think of as in terms of a national team player. Like, I love everything he's about. And I think he's just a wonderful guy, a wonderful player. And you talk about, like, him in terms of, like, the USMNT history. He's criminally underrated. So I absolutely love Josie Altidore for everything he's done and everything he continues to do for U.S. soccer. Are there any other guys you think are on the bubble for you?
I think for me, we talked about the MLS vets of the world. We talked about the young players of the world. So I think maybe – if you look at the outside perspective, not really young, not really old, those like medium guys, I think of Tyler Boyd. He's someone who came in really hot. Dual national panic was solved with him. We got him. And then he came in, scored a goal or two, and then kind of fell off a little bit, not only at the national team level, but the club level. But he's reemerging once again in the Turkish league. He's scoring goals. He's being productive. He's a quality two-footed winger. And obviously right now it seems like we're settled with either some sort of combination of Pulisic, Reyna, or Weah starting on the wings. But I really like what Tyler Boyd has to offer. I remember watching that first game he played and seeing how dynamic he was, how direct he was. And obviously after that, he kind of died down a little bit. But if we get that Tyler Boyd again, he's a player who's definitely going to factor in, even if it's off the bench.
All right, so let me ask you this. Tyler Boyd or Uli Lenes?
Obviously, we'll have to see how Uli does in the Dutch first division, but right now I'm going Tyler Boyd. Uli Lenes has not played a first team game for his club. That's not to me, though. I would hope in 6 months, I'm saying Uli Lenes. I want all my kids to shine. I want all the young players to shine. So that's not knock to Uli at all. I hope in 6 months after he's done with his first half a season of professional soccer, I'm saying Uli Lenes should be called up right now.
No, actually, I don't even agree. I guess you can't call up Uli right now for sure. I'm fine with that. But Tyler Boyd, like you said, was good. But I actually watched the Jamaica tape of him, and there are times where he kind of just looks sloppy. And I think, like you said, he's kind of an older guy who's fine with a little bit of upside. Dual national panic, yes, we got him. Great. But someone else, I think, I would rather call in over him. And obviously it's not a like for like sub, but I think Dwayne Holmes might be someone who I would consider over someone like Tyler Boyd. Obviously that would not, but would you call in Dwayne Holmes?
Yeah, I do like Dwayne Holmes, but I think the reason why I do like Tyler Boyd is he gives something different to other players where he is direct. He is pacey. Even if he doesn't beat the guy every single time, he's someone who you're constantly thinking about. And so that's why I like Tyler Boyd. And on the Dwayne Holmes front, I also like Dwayne Holmes. I think he's another guy who had a little bit of a start-stop club career of late. And I really did like him in that Jamaica game. And then obviously we really haven't seen Dwayne Holmes since. But right now for Dwayne Holmes, he just needs to be getting back and being productive for Derby County, because there's a lot of guys in his position in that creative role. When you look at Gio Reyna, Brendan Aaronson, even Sebastian Legette right now, that are getting goals, that are getting assists. So we just need to see Dwayne Holmes producing again before we probably get another look at him.
In terms of those guys who maybe there's an all-European camp, he's someone I would consider. You know, I think, like you said, he's not a top-tier option. He's not horrible. But we don't even know tangibly what we have with him. You know, we saw him a couple times, and he was injured for his next possible call-up, and then we never saw him again. And he's been good. He's been hurt. He's been so-so. So I guess we have to wait and see with him, but he's just someone I would keep an eye on in terms of the guys who can kind of provide a veteran presence who aren't necessarily old at this stage of their career. But who else is on that list?
I think our player pool is so deep, and that's something that's absolutely incredible for us. There's definitely guys that have been left out. There's so many guys we could talk about. I could throw in someone like Jackson Yule in there. We didn't talk about Nick Lima. There's so many people we could throw in. We could be here for days. And I think that's probably the most exciting thing to talk about when you think about the U.S. national team, because 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 10 years ago, what if we were to have these debates, we would just be listing out random MLS players. So I think it's incredible that we can literally sit here and you can say, I don't want to call up a guy who plays for one of the best teams in Turkey. We can sit here and say, I don't want to call up a guy who's contracted to one of the top teams in Germany. I don't want to call up a guy who has started in the Premier League before. 5-10 years ago, we would have looked stupid if we said that. So just the fact that we are having these debates about players that are playing at quality teams around the world just shows you where our pool is right now.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point to end on. It's just, you know, it's great. Every time we talk, we're always so encouraged and so positive. But the fact that there's this talent pool available is almost part of the reason why we're able to have these conversations. You know, it's not necessarily depth in terms of like, oh, everyone's insane, but it's depth and talent. You know, there's so much to pick from. And any variation of the guys we mentioned, you're going to be fine. You know, we're going to see who truly emerges. But all those guys we mentioned have some level of interesting prospect aside from a Daniel Lovitz. But also, you know, for the sake of conversation, I think we might have left out Mark McKenzie. And I think we can both, you know, kind of wrap up here and say, if Mark McKenzie is healthy, he's there in the next camp.
Yeah, for sure. He's been the best American center back in the league, someone who we talk about all the time. I think he was very underrated in the past, obviously had the little bit of injury struggle going to the U-20 World Cup. But this season, he has shown just what a talent he is. I really can't think of a foot he's put wrong. His passing's been on point with his weak foot as well. In fact, I remember playing FIFA the other day, and I saw he was a 2-star weak foot, and I almost threw my controller out the window because he's playing as a left center back, and almost exclusively all of his passes are coming with his left foot. So I definitely have been very impressed with what I've seen from Mark McKenzie.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's completely disrespectful by FIFA. And that's like, that's a conversation for another day, because Pulisic is an 81. And I think that's criminal on many levels. So we'll deal with that another time. But, you know, again, I get back to the same thing. I'm just so encouraged. You know, it's just every weekend there's something we have to watch. And it's no longer just MLS. It's really everywhere. Like, I bought ESPN Plus, and I wake up and I always tell my friends, I'm like, dude, I made this great purchase. I can watch Americans play everywhere. Like, that's amazing. You know, it's just such a incredible feeling. And obviously, we're two young guys. We don't necessarily live through the bad times, but we live through enough, and we understand the history and where we've been and now where we're going. It's just, dude, what a time to be a U.S. soccer fan, huh?
Absolutely incredible. You really couldn't ask for much more.
Well, that'll wrap up this edition of the One Goal U.S. Soccer podcast. Of course, I want to again say, please rate, review, and subscribe. I appreciate all the reviews you've gotten so far. And be on the lookout. You know, we have a couple of interviews coming up. I can't say who, but I can tell you guys will like them.